gentlemen, you are tuned in to the Scoreboard here on WSIC. 844-STUDIO-4. That's 844-788-3464. Man, do we have a show for you today. We have some trades. We have a head coach stepping down. What more could you want? And I'll tell you what, I was looking at the list of high school sports going on today. Well, most of them are on spring break. So there's not much going on. Nothing within our area happening, at least. At least that I know of. Now, I looked through everything I could to find something locally in the high school scene. But it's spring break, and that's just going to be the way it is right now. So we'll continue to keep you updated. There was one game yesterday, actually. It was Lake Norman High School taking on Covenant Day in the Jack Sink tournament. Well, we finally have the result from that one. Lake Norman dropped that game 8-5, so the winning streak is no more. 9 consecutive wins. And now they lost 1 to Covenant Day. Lake Norman's record now stands at 10-5. Still very good record, sitting third in the Greater Metro 4A Conference. So we'll continue the sports with high school as they come back. Next week, we got a lot going on. Everybody's back from spring break, so we're going to be able to talk about what's going on, where everything stands, as we make our race towards the baseball playoffs. I know lacrosse, women's basketball, women's soccer going on, so we have a lot to talk about. Tennis as well. Tennis is going on, so we'll continue to cover the high school scene as it comes up. But for now, I want to get into some of the headlines from today. And none bigger, in my opinion, than the NFL. So today, breaking news, and if you were listening to the Home Ad Show earlier today with Patrick Reynolds, you might have heard in the final 5 minutes that this news broke live on the Home Ad Show. The Buffalo Bills traded 4-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans. So the full trade is as followed. Stephon Diggs, a 2024 sixth-round pick and a 2025 fifth-round pick all go to the Houston Texans. In return, the Buffalo Bills receive a second-round draft pick in the 2025 draft. They do not get it for this year. They get it for next year, and it costs them a couple of late-round picks as well. Considering some of the contract, or not the contract, the trades that we have seen recently when it comes to wide receivers and how much respect they get in the trade market, the Bills did very good. They did, because we saw the other trades happen. Keenan Allen for the Chargers. Keenan Allen was traded for a fourth-round pick. Dallas traded Amari Cooper. They only got a fifth-round pick. So for the Bills to get a number 2 draft pick there, that's not bad. It isn't. But we'll see what that does. Now, there is a lot to dissect with this, because it was reported that Josh Allen was completely unaware of the trade. The headline is, Bills GM didn't tell Josh before the deal was done, but knew it was there was a possibility. So apparently the GM for the Bills let Josh Allen know that there's been a lot of calls about Stephon Diggs and that it was possible something can happen. And that's all they told him. And then they traded him, and Josh probably woke up this morning and said, you just got rid of my number one wide receiver. Now Khalil Shakir is their number one receiver. And we talked about the Bills quite a bit last year during the season, because they were one of the teams that people were high on, but they started the year terribly and had to win out to even make the playoffs, which they were able to do. And we talk about windows in sports. You have a certain amount of time to win before your window closes and before players get old, contracts need to be paid, you can't afford everybody, the salary cap is starting to constrict on you. The Bills window is closed. But what they're doing with this trade is trying to move it around and say, okay, we need to get younger, which they do, and that was a known thing. Their safeties both were over 30 years old last year. Their starting safeties. They lost Tre'Davious White. They got Von Miller on the team still on a huge contract after an ACL tear. So the Bills are in a tough spot right now. Moving Allen doesn't help them in the short term, but in the long run, it could turn out to be a good move. But we have yet to see that. 844-STUDIO-4. That's 844-788-3464. We're going to talk some NASCAR in this show as well. There was a fine levied against Xfinity Series driver Joey Gase. You probably know what the fine was for, so we'll talk about that. Also, we are going to hear from NASCAR Senior Vice President of Race Control, Senior Vice President of Competition, Elton Sawyer, about the restart that Denny Hamlin had on the final laps of the Richmond race on Sunday. And all I have to say about what we're going to hear is for years and for years and for years, we've talked about NASCAR making it up as they go. Well, it turns out they do. And there's really no other way for me to say this. I'm pretty sure Sawyer on air, on record said, yeah, we make it up as we go because we can't do everything. Well, that's part of running a league here, a motorsports league. You got to be able to make the calls when the calls have to be made. They didn't do it. Cost Martin Truex Jr. a win. Well, actually, Joey Logano, because he was the one that finished second. But without Hamlin jumping that restart the way he did, maybe Truex has a better fighting chance going into turn one. So we are going to hear from Elton Sawyer on that. We're also going to talk a little bit more about the NCAA as we get closer and closer to Final Four weekend, starting Friday with the women's games, men's on Sunday, and then championships. I'm sorry, in the men's Final Four on Saturday, championship for the women's on Sunday, and the men's on Monday. The basketball season is coming to a close. Now, we still have the NBA to talk about, and we do have NBA news for you regarding the Charlotte Hornets. Yes, remember that team right here in Charlotte, basketball team? Not very good, bad decisions all around, but we do have a little bit of a breaking news story there that broke earlier in the day. So we're going to get to all of that here today on the Scoreboard. 844-STUDIO-4. That's 844-788-3464. Get you live into the studio. Part of the Scoreboard. Anything on your mind at all that you want to talk about, we'll take your call here on the Scoreboard. We're coming up on that first commercial break of the program, so stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. We have a lot to discuss today. You're listening to the Home Ad Show. Home Ad Show, what am I talking about? Home Ad Show's in the morning. This is the Scoreboard. We're talking sports. We're back after this.
This guy knows his sports, right? There's more of the Scoreboard with Joe Berg on the way on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. The Scoreboard with Joe Berg continues now on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Scoreboard here. Second segment of the show, 844-STUDIO-4. That's 844-788-3464. Let's get into this NASCAR talk. I told you we were going to talk NASCAR. Actually, you know what? I have one other headline that I want to get to. We're going to save the NBA Charlotte Hornets news for a little bit later in the show. I want to get into what was released yesterday. Now, I like looking at ratings for a lot of these sports events. The ratings for the Iowa LSU game, women's college basketball, Elite Eight. Well, the ratings last night were released for that game, and it was the most watched women's basketball game of all time. Yes, you heard me correctly. No game has ever been tuned into more than this women's basketball game, and very good reason to tune into this one. Here is what I think is important to note on this, because I know there's a lot of people out there that are probably like, why are you talking about women's college basketball? Does that really matter? Like, are people actually watching this? Well, I can prove to you right there, just from that stat alone, that yes, people are tuning in to the women's basketball tournament. It is great. And if you haven't watched it yet, you have an opportunity to watch four really good teams go at it this weekend. Now, one thing to note with this, with majority opinions, or what it used to be, how people used to think, being, oh, nobody's watching women's basketball. That 12.3 million viewers is more than the last nine Daytona 500s. Yes. You heard me correctly. You have to go all the way back to 2015 to find a Daytona 500 that had more views than Monday night's game. Women's basketball is big. I don't know how else to explain it to you other than, well, NASCAR can't even pull that kind of an audience anymore. Now, once upon a time, they could. But a lot of things going on in the world of NASCAR contribute to people not watching anymore. The playoffs, the changing of the cars, the reduction of horsepower, the personalities being nerfed, and nobody really being an energetic personality for the sport. I mean, as much as we talk about Denny Hamlin and his antics on track sometimes, his podcast is huge, and it's kind of important to NASCAR, as well as the Dale Jr. Download, but he doesn't race anymore except for the one-offs that he does, which, by the way, he will be racing Bristol in the Xfinity Series later in the year. We've been talking about the final restart of the Richmond race on Sunday with Denny Hamlin leading and Martin Truex Jr. on the outside, and the question being, did Denny Hamlin jump the restart? And he said on his podcast, I don't know what made him think of saying this, but he said, it's never been a hard line. Like, you have to restart inside that box. And my counter to that would be, then why even have it at all? Well, NASCAR Senior Vice President of Competition, Elton Sawyer, he had some comments about this during the week. Here is what he had to say about that Denny Hamlin restart. And I want you to pay close attention to some of the words that he uses.
The zone is laid out. You know, it's in the driver video. It's in the it's laid out on the racetrack. There's a single line where you get started. There's a double line, you know, that basically ends the restart zone. So the leader has the right to start within that zone. Obviously, Denny took the liberties of going, you know, a little bit early there. And again, if it's lap five. Excuse me, if it's lap 5, is it lap 10, it's lap 50, it's lap, you know, 350, and the ability to have time to really dissect that and look at it, because the last thing you want to do is get that call wrong. The leader has earned that right. As I said earlier, the pit stop is what they you know, they did a great job. They got off pit road early. They earned that right to be able to control the restart.
I have so many problems with that comment. So many problems with it. Number one, you admitted that Denny Hamlin launched early. That's all you needed to say. Stop right there while you're ahead. Denny launched early. We got it wrong. But no, he had to keep talking, and he kept talking himself into a hole. He said, oh, he earned that right, though. Yeah, he earned the right to restart first. He didn't earn the right to restart early. Nobody has that right. Nobody. Because we've seen it time and time again. You jump early, you beat the leader to the line, you're going to get a penalty for it. It's happened time and time again. And then he went into the third terrible point where he says, no matter if it's lap one, lap 50, lap 350, at least then you have time to dissect it. So are you telling me in that comment right there that you are officiating a race differently on lap one than you are on lap 399? Because that's exactly what you said. You just told me that whatever it is that happens, you're going to officiate it differently on lap one than you will on lap 399. Because apparently you would have had time to dissect it. Anybody watching that could tell that Denny launched early. No matter how much, you don't even need to have the miles per hour over his car like Fox likes to do when they're showing the closing rate of a certain car or a chase. You know, second place is running down first place. They put up a graphic. You always see the miles per hour. It's up there. Well, NASCAR didn't, or Fox did not put the miles per hour up on the screen when they showed the replay. And that should have been a red flag to everyone. It was a red flag to me because even without the miles per hour on the screen, I can tell from the one replay they showed that Denny jumped early. And here we have Elton Sawyer admitting it, and they do nothing about it. Here's the rest of his comments.
I think if you look at short track racing in general, Pete, I mean, all over the country, I mean, that's our fans like restarts, they like pit stops. It'll be something, obviously, that will be on our radar this weekend as we have a triple header going into Martinsville with the Trucks, Xfinity, and Cup. So, obviously, we will, be more in tune to that and on top of it, as well as the competitors will. This will be something that, again, you know, I would not roll into Martinsville thinking that I'm going to be going a car length or two ahead of the restart zone.
Admitting it again that Hamlin went early. You know, NASCAR implemented a policy a few years back. It used to be back in the day, you know, and I'm not talking about 20, 30 years ago. I'm talking maybe like 5 to 10 years ago. If you were the winner of the race and you failed post-race inspection, you were dropped to the tail end of the field and nobody won the race. It was just kind of like, hey, your win was encumbered. The rest of the standings stay the same and you lose all your points. Then they changed it to where if you get your win taken away from you because of post-race inspection, the field all moves up one spot. So whoever finished second would then finish first. And it has happened a couple of times since they've changed the rule. Why can't we apply it to this? Because what is the penalty for jumping the restart? Tail of the field or drive-through or something detrimental to your race? So maybe you can't disqualify the driver, but you can definitely drop them to the tail of the lead lap. How many times have we seen that happen at Talladega, at Daytona, where you go under the yellow line, where you're forced under the yellow line, and NASCAR says, no, you can't do that? Tony Stewart and Regan Smith coming to the checkered flag at Talladega. Regan Smith got underneath Tony Stewart. He was forced down below the yellow line. And what happened? He beat Tony to the flag, but NASCAR said, no, sorry, you passed under the yellow line, even though he was forced down there, and they dropped him to the tail of the field. Why can't you go in retrospect now, in hindsight, and say, you know what, Denny, you jumped the restart. Sorry, you didn't win this race. You committed a violation. You're dropped to the tail of the lead lap. Now, I don't think this is going to have any consequences next year, even the next race. That call with Stewart and Regan Smith directly contributed to the Brad Keselowski-Carl Edwards finish at Dega the next year, where Edwards got sent into the catch fence. Brad Keselowski said it in his post-race interview. He said, last year they took a win away from Regan Smith for being forced down the line. I was not going down below that line. And that was the result. A car flying through the air in the catch fence. You just make the right call and you don't have this problem. And it doesn't help that Denny Hamlin seems to think that the restart zone is a suggestion. I'm going to see if I can find that clip during the commercial. It might have been a tweet that he sent about that. Anyway, we're coming up on our next commercial break. We are going to move on from the NASCAR talk, even though I am fired up about this. 3 days later, and I'm still upset because we say it over and over again, NASCAR makes it up as they go. And it's true. And it's no more apparent than on Sunday when Denny Hamlin obviously jumped the restart and they did nothing about it. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Scoreboard. We're back right after this.
Keep it right here. We'll have more of The Scoreboard with Joe Berg in just a moment from 105.9 100.7 WSIC. It's The Scoreboard with your host, Sports Director Joe Berg on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Welcome back here on the second half of The Scoreboard. Man, what a conversation about Denny Hamlin and the restart zone and how it's enforced. NASCAR admitted they got it wrong, and I gotta give them credit for that. But you don't get very much credit when you don't do anything about it. After the fact, you can, you have the ability to, you put it in the rules to where you can make a problem, fix a problem that you created. They're not going to do anything about it though. And, I was looking for that Denny Hamlin quote. I can find quite a bit of stuff that he was talking about that's problematic with the restart. The problem is I'm not going to play a 10-minute Denny Hamlin clip. It's not happening. Just know he was in the wrong, NASCAR got it wrong, and we move on. That's all you can do. So we look forward to Martinsville. By the way, the Xfinity series made some headlines this week. I don't know if anybody was watching the Xfinity race at Richmond, but Joey Gase, he threw his rear bumper at another car during the race. Yeah, you heard me correctly. He got spun. Bumper cover was hanging off. And, he climbed out of the car, ripped it off, and threw it at the four car. What a moment that is. I don't think I've ever seen a driver throw a bumper cover at another car. I've seen helmets, I've seen gloves, steering wheel. Never a bumper cover. That is quite funny, though, watching the video where you just see him rip off the bumper, walk down the track, and overhead throw that thing. Man, what a moment. He got fined $5,000 for that. NASCAR should be celebrating that. They should. Anyway, We head to Martinsville this weekend, and it's another short track. So we go to back-to-back short tracks. It doesn't happen much in the schedule, but this is one of those weird quirks in the 2024 schedule where we are going to have back-to-back short track races. So we go to Martinsville this weekend. Every race, meaning the truck in the Xfinity series, except for the Cup, are under the lights. The Cup series, for some reason, is the only one that is not under the lights. Let's hear from Richmond winner Denny Hamlin. Here's what he has to say on how much winning the pole, or how much of an advantage winning the pole is at Martinsville. Here he is. Uh-oh. Do we have the file? Here it is.
Yeah, it's big at Martinsville for sure. It's not as big as Phoenix, but it's, you know, it's close in that vicinity. I don't know how many pole winners have started, you know, have finished in first. It's, I don't know the numbers exactly, but certainly it's an advantage, especially if you have a good pit crew that, you know, is just very solid, not going to make mistakes. You know, you're most likely going to gain a spot or two each time you go in the pit area. So it's certainly an advantage.
I wouldn't even say that winning the pole is the biggest advantage of in Richmond. I would just say that it's an advantage to be in the top 20. Because if you aren't, when you take the green flag, you're already half a lap down. You know, the leader after five laps can see the tail of the field going down the straightaway. You don't want to be back there. You don't want to be in that traffic. You want to put cars between you and whoever the leader is. And obviously, if you win the pole, you don't have to worry about that. But if you qualify fifth, you still don't really have to worry about going a lap down, at least not early in the race, unless you have a terrible car and fade to the back immediately. It doesn't happen often, but qualifying is important at Martinsville. I don't see pole being the most important thing at that track. I still say the most important thing on that track is being far enough ahead at the start of the race to where you're not half a lap down going into lap five. Let's move on from the talk of NASCAR, because, man, I could talk about this all day and just find problems with what NASCAR is doing. And I don't have a problem with the back-to-back short track races. I actually think there should be more short track races, but they should fix them and just, all you have to do, the car is fine, just put some horsepower in it. Make it so that these guys can't mash the throttle coming out of the corners. 844 Studio 4. That's 844-788-3464. We have some Charlotte Hornets news. Head coach Steve Clifford for the Charlotte Hornets announced at the end of the year he will be stepping down from head coach of the team and will begin a role in the front office, an advisory role. Here's the thing. I feel a sneeze coming on, so we're going to try to get through this. Here's the thing. Good. It was needed. A head coaching change was needed because obviously these two seasons for Coach Clifford didn't work out. He took over control of the team in the 2022-23 season, and things have gotten worse. Now, I know they're without their star. I don't know if I'm going to call him a star, but I know they're without their star player, LaMelo Ball. I get it. Okay, I get it. But it was a terrible year. My problem with this is, how does a coach that doesn't do good for you, has a subpar coaching record, how does that guy get an advisory role in the front office? You're going to take advice from him? He couldn't take a team to round three of the playoffs, round two of the playoffs at that. An assistant coach for the first part of his career, he took over Charlotte, and then he went to Orlando for a couple of years, if anybody remembers that. Then comes back as the coach again. Got Charlotte to the playoffs a couple of times, but I don't know. I just feel like it's this phenomenon you see in sports where you stick with what's familiar. And loyalty is good to have, but too much loyalty in an organization is what's going to set you back. I'm not saying that the Hornets are in trouble because Steve Clifford is going into a front office role. I'm not even saying that he's bad for the front office. I'm just saying he's been there a while. People are familiar with him. That's probably one of the reasons that he got the position he did in the front office. Nothing wrong with that. It's just, I'd rather a better coach do that. And it's hard to even say that because you never know if a coach is going to be able to translate their skills into a front office role. You just don't know. And we've seen coaches not work out in the front office, especially in basketball. Phil Jackson, great head coach, terrible front office guy. He was bad when he was with the Knicks, that's for sure. I mean, Steve Clifford doesn't have the history of winning. So who knows? Maybe his skills are more applicable to the front office. It's yet to be seen. But this Hornets team, they got a lot of things to get fixed before we start looking at playoff runs and deep playoff runs. It's going to be a long time before we see that. Heading to our final break of the day. Don't go anywhere. This is The Scoreboard, back after this.
This guy knows his sports, right? There's more of The Scoreboard with Joe Berg on the way on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Talk sports with Joe Berg. Call 844-STUDIO-4. It's The Scoreboard on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Segment here on The Scoreboard. 844-STUDIO-4. That's 844-788-3464 to get you into the studio part of The Scoreboard. We got one segment left, so you only got about 10 minutes or so before we head out for the day. But we'll be here every day of the week, Monday through Friday, for The Scoreboard right here at the 5 o'clock hour. First week at this 5 o'clock hour, so hopefully everyone's drive home is going good. I don't want anybody getting in any trouble on the road, so make sure you keep your eyes on that road, all right? Thank you. Okay, final segment of the show. We are going to get into the NHL. We only have a handful of games remaining. Carolina Hurricanes, New York Rangers both have 7 games remaining each. Those two teams are separated by 3 points in the standings right now, with the New York Rangers first with 104 points and your Hurricanes second with 101 points. That's pretty close, but when you go over to the league standings, things are even closer there. It is. We've talked about the President's Trophy before. The President's Trophy in the NHL is awarded to the team who has the most points at the end of the season, at the end of the regular season. Right now, the Rangers have 104 points on their standings page here. Second would be the Dallas Stars and the Boston Bruins tied at 103. Carolina Hurricanes 101, Vancouver Canucks 100, Colorado Avalanche 100, and the Florida Panthers 99. 7 teams within 5 points of each other for the top of the NHL. That is called parity. And that is what some of these other sports leagues are wishing that they can have. And it just doesn't happen in other sports because of the unpredictability of the NHL. Have you ever heard of the term puck luck? That's like 30% of the reason that a certain team will win an NHL game. It's just because the puck happened to bounce a certain way. Maybe it's a rebound that just goes right onto another player's stick and it gets buried, or it hits the post. Puck luck. That's why you don't see so much parity in other sports like that. You know, the NFL was decided pretty early. We knew that the Ravens were going to be the best team, that the 49ers were going to be the best team at the end of the regular season. And I told you that at the beginning of the NFL season last year. I said, these are going to be the two best teams. I mean, there's no way around it. It's very hard to predict who is going to be the best team in the NHL. Honestly, nobody expected the Boston Bruins to be where they are. They lost huge players. They lost center depth. You don't lose center depth and continue to win. Well, the Boston Bruins have proven that you can. The only thing that's weird, and this is getting more into the specifics of how a team does. The Vancouver Canucks, 4 points behind the Rangers, sitting fifth overall in the NHL, have the most regulation wins in the league, tied with the Winnipeg Jets, who are down in eighth. Basically, that means the Jets and the Canucks have won the most games without going to overtime. That's an important stat, because ahead of those two teams in the standings are the Boston Bruins. The Boston Bruins have 34 regulation wins. They also have 15 overtime losses. 15. Does that shout a team that is going to give you confidence in the playoffs? Not me, because it seems to me they're not very good at 5-on-5. And that's what overtime is in the NHL playoffs. It's 5-on-5, continuous. First team to score wins. It's not 3-on-3 for 5 minutes, have some fun, and then, you know what, let's just end the game. We're going to go to a shootout. What was it, 2020? It was the COVID lockout year where they had the playoffs in the bubble in the NHL. We had like 7 overtimes. You play until you score. So I look to teams who have a higher regulation win total. You can count regulation plus overtime wins if you want. And if you did that, it would be the New York Rangers sitting at 47 regulation and overtime wins. But they only have 39 regulation wins, which means 8 of those wins were in 3-on-3 overtime or during a shootout. It's not applicable to the playoffs. So it's really hard to determine who's going to be good and who's going to make a deep run. But the regulation wins are something that you can look towards to say, okay, this team plays good at 5-on-5. They're able to close out games. They're able to get goals at the end when it matters. You look even farther behind, Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, only 95 points. Not bad. They have a chance to hit 100. There are so many teams that have a chance to hit 100 points this year in the standings. They only have 31 regulation wins. 31 regulation wins. They have 43 on the year. That's 12 overtime and shootout wins on a season. Doesn't matter once you get to the playoffs, because you're going to stay at 5-on-5, and if those stats are any indication, Toronto can't hold on to a lead. They can't clutch a game late. They might get beat up in 5-on-5 overtime in the playoffs. And you know they're going to go to overtime. Most of their games have. Well, not most, but a lot of them have. You know, they have 31 regulation wins, which means they have 12 overtime and shootout wins, but they also have 9 losses. 21 games have gone to overtime for them. 21. There's 82 games in a season. I will ask again, does that shout confidence in the playoffs right there? I don't think it does. And then you look towards the Carolina Hurricanes, the team everybody wants to go far in the playoffs. 39 regulation wins. That ties them with the New York Rangers. That puts them one spot behind the Canucks and the Jets. They've only lost 7 games in overtime, and they have 6 overtime shootout wins. That's a team that can get it done in regulation. That's a team that can get it done in 5-on-5. Carolina is a team that's probably going to make a deep run into the postseason this year. Now, that second round matchup is looking like it's yet again going to be New York Rangers, Carolina Hurricanes. And that's why the standings are so important when you look at your division. If the Rangers end up winning the Metropolitan and meeting the Carolina Hurricanes in the second round, Game 7 will be in New York. But if it's the other way around, Game 7 will be here in North Carolina. So we need to see this Carolina team continue to win at the end of the year to maybe jump the Rangers in the standings and steal that home ice away, because home ice is huge in the playoffs. We have some NHL games tonight, important ones, as a matter of fact, as the New York Rangers are in action against the Devils. And then tomorrow, the Carolina Hurricanes will be back in action. They're going to be home against the Boston Bruins. Just told you, the Bruins are one of those teams that you kind of have to step back a little bit and say, are they going to be a threat in the playoffs? Now, they're definitely a regular season threat, and I'm not going to take that away from them. But are they going to be dangerous in the playoffs? If you ask me, I would say no. We're coming up towards the end of the show here today. Let's get to this day in sports history. Some things that happened in the world of sports at this day. April. We're in April now. April 3rd, 1987. NASCAR was at the Talladega Super Speedway. And Bill Elliott set a NASCAR qualifying record with a lap time average speed of 212 miles per hour around that Talladega track. Not long after that, the restrictor plate was introduced and they never went over 205 again. I don't know if the restrictor plate was a good or a bad thing for NASCAR. I like to say it was a good thing because it inadvertently made this incredible style of racing that we call pack racing. Also on this day, in 1992, this one's interesting, the first ever exhibition game at Camden Field was played, where the Orioles beat the New York Mets. I think I saw one other that I wanted to read, but I seem to have lost it. But you know, that happens sometimes. There's a lot of things that have happened on this day in the history of sports. Ah, here it is. 1983 on this day, the second ever NCAA Women's Basketball Championship, USC, Southern California, beat Louisiana Tech 69-67. That was on this day in 1983. Thanks, everyone, for tuning into the Scoreboard today. I always appreciate you listening in and hearing what I have to say about the happenings in the world of sports. I'll be back same time tomorrow with more for you. Don't miss it. Until then, have a good night, everyone.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Mooresville, North Charlotte.